Hello everybody, I'm George from Ireland, and opposite me is 33 South Eaton Place in London, in Chelsea. So that is where J. Enoch Pohl lived from roughly 1960 to his death in February 1998. And indeed, when he was feeling ill, he was rushed to hospital here, the King Edward VII Hospital for former army officers, and that's where he died. He was put on a drip, and he said, "I don't call that much of a lunch," and he fell unconscious, and those were his last words. So there he died at the age of 85. So J. Enoch Pohl, born in 1912, just outside Birmingham, the only child of two school teachers. And of course, being an only child at the dawn of the 20th century was highly unusual. So he was 1/8 Welsh. Apart from that, he was English through and through. So there were plenty of books in the house, but not a lot of money. He was always someone who showed his academic precocity, and he liked learning about birds off by heart. I think he lost this taste for ornithology later in life. He used to stand on a chair and lecture about birds, and they used to call him the professor. Well, these are prophetic words, because he became the youngest professor in the British Empire, becoming a professor, I think it was the age of 25. He was annoyed that Nietzsche had pipped him at the post, not that Friedrich Nietzsche was in the British Empire. So more about him. He went to King Edward the Sixth School, Birmingham, which was the most distinguished school in the United Kingdom's second city. And he was brought up an Anglican, became a high Anglican, a very zealous one. When they visited a castle in Wales one time as a child, he entered a certain room and took his hat off. And his mother asked, "Why did he do that?" And he said, "Well, that is the room where Edward III was born." And he happened to know that sort of detail. But he was not without his mischief, and he said he used to vandalise the railway property on the train to and from school. Remember, he was little when the First World War was on, and he was noted for his gifts, and he was told he would win a major open scholarship to Cambridge, which indeed he did. By major open scholarship, it means that anyone could apply, because there would be closed scholarships, as in you had to be an orphan, or you had to be the son of a Royal Naval officer, or you had to be born in Yorkshire. But open, because more people could apply for it, is even more competitive. And he did a 3-hour scholarship paper, leave after 2 hours and still come top. So he studied at Cambridge, I think it was Trinity, doing literae humaniores. He was known as John initially, but then there was another classicist who was also John Pohl. So he went by his middle name Enoch, as well as J. Enoch Pohl. So Powell or Pohl, Pohl being the more pucker pronunciation. I think he pronounced it Powell. Obviously, it's derived from the Welsh up Howell, son of Howell, which is anglicised to Powell. After graduating, he stayed on just doing some postgraduate research, not doing a higher degree. Of course, he could have a full academic career until the late 20th century with only a primary degree. And then he got a post at the University of Sydney, went to Australia, and he taught Gough Whitlam, later Prime Minister of Australia, who found him uninspiring. And the Second World War broke out. He'd been horrified by the Munich Agreement, and said that smarmy traitors ought to be hanged from lampposts. So the likes of Neville Chamberlain, the Prime Minister. But on the war breaking out, he thought Australia wasn't doing enough of the war effort. Remember, in those days, Australia was very much part of the Empire. People thought the Empire had a long way left to go. He sailed for the United Kingdom, braving the U-boats, and he volunteered for the army, even thinking maybe he'd go to Australia House. Would that help him? He poised as an Australian. He'd only been in the Australia for about 2 years. But anyway, he joined, was at the Royal Warwickshire Regiment as a private, and he said it was wonderful. We're like, joining the army, we're like bridegrooms going to meet our brides. Well, some of his comrades were leaving their real brides behind, and he was the most promoted soldier in the Second World War, going from private to brigadier in just 5 years. His extraordinary facility for languages was noted, but he was sent to India, where he mastered Urdu. His first night in Delhi being spent sleeping on a bench at a railway station. I'm not sure why he couldn't get to his billet. Harbored an ambition to become Viceroy of India. So the Second World War ended, and he never saw action. That really miffed him. Years later, a radio interview, he was asked, "How would you like to be remembered?" He said, "I should like to have been killed in the war." Well, he was a hate figure for left-wingers. By the way, making this video, don't assume I'm pro him. I'm not. I wrote an article years ago, 2010, why Enoch was wrong, because he's most notorious for his Rivers of Blood oration in March 1968. So that really was incendiary, and he did a lot to aggravate racism. And there was a lot of frank racism against non-whites in the United Kingdom in the 60s. So Pohl, after the Second World War, he came back to the United Kingdom. And when it was announced in 1947 that the United Kingdom was about to grant independence to India, it was horrified. And he walked the streets all night trying to come to terms with it. But it's astonishing you didn't see this coming. Anybody who'd had a newspaper for the last 5 years could have seen it coming. In 1942, Churchill himself announced that India would be granted independence within 3 years of Japanese surrender. And it happened 2 years of the day that Japan surrendered. So that was it. There's the Cripps mission. Sir Stafford Cripps, you know, the Labour cabinet minister and former ambassador to the Soviet Union, he'd gone out to announce it to the Indian politicians, including the Muslim League. So that was it. Now, he didn't do things by half measures, Powell. And he said the only way to cope with this is to embrace colonization and accept total decolonization. And he didn't care a fig for the Commonwealth. He thought that that was really just sort of a shock absorber. The United Kingdom could still pretend it was a superpower. It very definitely wasn't. So in his view, there was no sense in trying and failing to be a superpower. The United Kingdom simply had to accept it was second-rate power. Better to be an excellent second-rate power than a failed superpower. Anyhow, so he was elected for Wolverhampton South West in 1950. And he was a bit ahead of his time with his free market views. This is the time that Butlerism was the orthodoxy, as in a merger between Butler, as in R.A. Butler, the Conservative Chancellor Exchequer surname, and Gateskill, as in Hugh Gateskill, the Labour Chancellor Exchequer from 1947 onwards, subsequently leader of the Labour Party, when there was this sort of mixed economy and there was a consensus on that, on a lot of public ownership and so on. The government responsible for house building, like directly responsible, not subcontracted to private companies, owning swathes of the economy. So Pol, he was sort of unremarkable in the 50s, although he gave his Camp Hola speech in which he spoke out against the torture of suspected Mau Mau insurgents in Kenya, and some of them even been beaten to death. Quite correctly pointing out this is barbaric. And when it came to Suez, he was indifferent. He didn't think the United Kingdom should be fighting to keep a hold of the canal in Egypt. He was against the death penalty. He favoured decriminalising homosexuality. So he was not the stereotypical reactionary that you might think. Some of his views might surprise you. So that was Enoch Pearl. In 1952, he married Pamela, a secretary some years younger than himself. He never seemed to have had a romantic relationship with a woman or a man until this point. He sired two daughters. He had been hoping for a son and having him go to Eton. He'd learned to ride to the hounds, and he had a mild West Midlands accent mixed with received pronunciation. They mostly talked very posh in the Conservative Parliamentary Party in those days. Health secretary in the early 60s, he specifically recruited nurses from the West Indies. Then the Conservatives were out of office. Edward Heath was leader in the late 60s, and there was his Rivers of Blood oration saying, like the Roman, I'm filled with foreboding. I see the Tiber foaming with much blood. So he was sacked from the shadow cabinet for that. He'd scarcely uttered a phonem on immigration up until that point. So it was very surprising. And he said that he would really send up a rocket. And he certainly did in that speech in Birmingham, only part of which was filmed. Goodness. So he got a huge mailbag. Royal Mail had to lay on an extra van to come and deliver all his fan letters. And a high majority of people were in favour. Many London dockers marched to Parliament chanting, "We want Enoch Powell," as in they wanted to be Prime Minister. But he was a hate figure for the left. He used to say, "Disembowel Enoch Powell, try and disrupt his meetings," and so on. So Enoch Powell, he'd use very inflammatory language, quoting this constituent, probably non-existent. A lot of newspaper men tried to track her down, saying what the black man will hold the white man over the whip hand in 10 or 20 years. I mean, as though there has to be racial conflict, there definitely doesn't. Or some white woman who'd had dog excreta pushed through her letterbox, and this was the fault of non-white people, as in all non-white people are responsible for the bad deeds of one of them. Whites do bad things too, but according to Powell, somehow all whites aren't guilty of the crime of one. So Powell didn't have the excuse of stupidity. He was a wicked man, it's true. Now, he left the Conservative Party in 1974, urged his followers to vote Labour because he was disenchanted with the Conservative Party having led the United Kingdom into the European Economic Community. So then he was elected for South Down, a constituency in Northern Ireland for the Ulster Unionist Party. He held that seat till I think it was 1987, when defeated by Eddie McGrady of the Social Democratic and Labour Party. What else about Pearl? In Northern Ireland, he'd embarrassed himself somewhat, mispronouncing some local toponyms. He was one of only three Ulster Unionist MPs ever not to belong to the Orange Order or indeed any one of the Loyal Orders. But as he said himself, he couldn't make up his mind if he was a Catholic or a Protestant, as he was a Catholic within the Church of England, not a Roman Catholic. So that was him. And unusually for a Conservative, okay, wasn't Tory after 1974, he was quite anti-American. And he felt the dissolution of the British Empire was one of America's war aims in the Second World War, and so on. And he felt that the USA was behind the IRA, which is largely false. I mean, there were some Americans who were financially supporting terrorism there. But he was a fulsome admirer of Maggie Thatcher. So he was out of Parliament. He declined the offer of a peerage. He'd wanted there to be only hereditary peers. In 1958, he'd opposed the creation of life peerages and said it'd be hypocritical to accept one as he was against them on principle. So that is Enoch Powell. He was still learning languages in his 80s, working on a translation of the Bible. And he sort of regressed to childhood, as an elderly man, as people often do. And his Brummie accent became stronger again. So that is J. Enoch Powell, buried in Warwickshire in his brigadier's uniform in the plot for his former regiment. So they don't make him like that anymore. People say he's a political titan. But there was a lot that was bad for him. He definitely impaired race relations. Thanks for watching my video. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.